So Zach's going to bring up a slide that kind of sums up where Moses is here at this point in his life. And this is, never forget this. Somebody put this on Facebook and I bought this up. Took the picture down in Pickerington. But if you think you've blown God's plan for your life, rest in this. You, my beautiful friend, are not that powerful. In other words, you cannot go beyond what God has for you in life. You can't do it. When we left Moses last week, he was living in the wilderness with his father-in-law, and he had a wife and a new child, and he's just minding his own business, raising a family. Remember, he was in the wilderness running because he had murdered an Egyptian. And not only did Moses entertain, he had no thoughts that God would ever use him again. And not only that, he was probably hoping, as almost everybody in the Bible was, that God would just stay out of his life until I need him, and then just be available when I call on you. He really wanted nothing to do with God. He really wanted nothing to do with leading the people out of Egypt. He didn't want any of that, as we're going to see. As we open this week, Moses is 80 years old. An extraordinary event is about to take place. Exodus 3:1. Now Moses was keeping the flock of his father-in-law Jethro, the priest of Midian, and he led his flock to the west side of the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. Horeb is the Hebrew name for the non-Hebrew name Sinai. So Mount Horeb is Mount Sinai. It's not a coincidence that Moses just happened to be at this point, on this day, at this time. God has this all planned out. Exodus 3:2. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a blazing fire from the middle of a bush. Moses stared in amazement. Though the bush was engulfed in flames, it didn't burn up. An overlooked part of that verse is the amazement. Moses has been in this desert wilderness for 40 years now, and he's seen it all. And God had to do something extraordinary to get Moses' attention. Now notice at this point, nobody's spoken to Moses. He simply sees this bush on fire, and he stops to go look at it. Some theologians think, by the way, see how it says there's the angel of the Lord appeared to him? A lot of theologians think that this was an angel, an actual angel, and that's not true. It's actually a theophany. A theophany is an appearance of Christ in the Old Testament. And this is Jesus who's in the midst of the burning shrub. And we're going to see who's right, us or them. Jesus appeared a whole bunch of times in the Old Testament. I don't know if you're aware of that, but he appeared in human form many times in the Old Testament. For instance, when Abraham was just minding his own business, sitting under a tree looking towards Sodom where Lot, his son-in-law, was, Jesus and two angels came and sat down with Abraham and had a talk with him. And at that point, Jesus stayed behind to hang out with Abraham, and the angels went ahead to Sodom to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah and the cities of the plain. It was at that point that Abraham was bargaining with Jesus, trying to save Sodom. What if you can only find 20 righteous people? What if you can only find 10 righteous people? That was Jesus in human form in the Old Testament. But here at the burning bush, Jesus hasn't spoken yet. He simply showed Moses an amazing sight to get his attention. Exodus 3:4. When the Lord saw that he, Moses, turned aside to look, God called to him from the midst of the bush and said, "Moses, Moses." And he said, "Here I am." Who called from Abraham out of the bush? Was it an angel? To tell us. God called to him from the midst of the bush. This is Jesus speaking. It's not an angel. Okay. Now, there's something else to see here. Jesus is usually referred to in the Hebrew Bible as Lord, and God is God. So we see here that Lord and God are one and the same. So this verse is calling Jesus God in the Old Testament. When people say he never claimed to be God, there it is right there. And then we get another evidence that this is Jesus speaking and not an angel. Exodus 3:5. Then he said, he being Jesus, "Do not come near. Take your sandals off your feet, for the place on which you are standing is holy ground." Now listen, the ground itself isn't anything special. It's just a shrub. It's rocks and desert and sand and nothing. There's nothing special about the place. It's God's presence that makes this place special. That's our second evidence that this is Christ and not an angel during the speaking. Revelation 15:4a, almost all versions. Who will not fear you, Lord, and glorify your name, for you alone are holy. So we see that the place was made holy by the presence of God himself. That command, by the way, to take the sandals off your feet is repeated. That's not the only place God says that. As Joshua is about to conquer the Holy Land that we know today is Israel, in Joshua 5:15, the captain of the Lord's host, that's Jesus, said to Joshua, remove your sandals from your feet, for the place where you are standing is holy. And Joshua did so. Exodus 3:6. He said also, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. Now, so far, the voice from the bush hasn't given Moses any commands. He's simply identifying who he is. He hasn't given Moses his marching orders yet. And this is now the third time that the voice says, I'm God. And so we see it's not an angel. It amazes me how many educated Bible scholars and prominent pastors get this stuff wrong. It's clear what it says, that this is God speaking from the burning bush. Jesus quoted this verse, by the way, in Matthew 22:32. And in that verse, Jesus said something that should encourage everyone in this room, and it's easy to overlook. Matthew 22:32. I am the God of Abraham and the God of Isaac and the God of Jacob. This is Jesus repeating what he said back here in Exodus. Now listen, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob are thousands of years in the past. And look at what Jesus says. I'm not the God of the dead, I'm the God of the living. In other words, just because you can't see him anymore, just because they're not walking around with flesh and bones, they are still alive. Because I'm not the God of the dead, I'm the God of the living. That's what Jesus is trying to get across to these people. Exodus 3:6. Then Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look at God. We see here, listen, every place in the Bible, you hear all the time, and if you haven't, you will, arrogant people will say, well, I'm going to tell God how it is, and when I get to heaven, I'm just going to ask God why he let this happen, why you did that happen. Listen, you're not going to be asking God anything. Every time somebody encounters God in the Bible, they are in deathly fear, absolute stark terror of being in the presence of God. Again, unless we're not supposed to be in fear of God, and God always assuages their fears, so he always combs over their fears and assures them and comforts them. But our response to God is to be afraid of God because of his immense power. Angels, by the way, are not to be worshipped. And so if this was an angel in the bush, and Moses is hiding his face, and he's covering his face, and he's dropped to his knees, and he's in fear, the angel would have said, stop that. But because the person in the bush didn't say that, that shows that it's Jesus who is worthy and deserving of Moses' respect and admiration. Exodus 3:7-8. Then the Lord told him, I have certainly seen the oppression of my people in Egypt. I have heard the cries of their distress because of their harsh slave drivers. Yes, I am aware of their suffering, so I have come down to rescue them from the power of the Egyptians and lead them out of Egypt into their own fertile and spacious land. It is a land flowing with milk and honey. This is important. The land where the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites now live. Bunch of different names, okay? So we're going to take a quick look at who these people are. But the thing you have to know is all these people, and they're not nice people. They are tribes of war. And all these people are now inhabiting the land we call Israel today. The Canaanites are descended from Noah's grandson, Canaan. Today, the land that they occupied, we call the Palestinian territory. The Hittites came down from the north, from Syria and Turkey. Syria here, Turkey over here. So they came down from the north. and they occupied the middle part of the country. The Hittites were a powerful tribe. They even took on the mighty Babylonian Empire. And then they would go after Egypt. And Egypt and the Hittites had a war that was so bad and so many people were dying that they signed the first known peace treaty in human history. So you can see that these aren't just some people groups and nomads out wandering around in the desert. These are all people of war. The Amorites are a little more difficult to trace because there appear to be two different parts of them in history, of the Amorites. And they lived 1,000 years apart. We had a group of Amorites, and then 1,000 years later, we have the biblical group of Amorites. Most scholars believe that they, the Amorites, are the Philistines, and that they were the giants living in the land. The last of these giant people was a king named Og, who had a bed 13 and a half feet long. Deuteronomy 3:11. The Perizzites, not much is known for them, except they lived in the part of the land that God was giving to Judah, the main tribe in Israel. Later on, some of their remnants will be slaves under King Solomon, David's son. The Hivites, whose very name means wicked, would later on trick Solomon into signing a peace treaty with them. The problem with that was, before Joshua went into the promised land, God said, you do not sign any treaties with these people. You kick them out, all of them. Don't sign any treaties. But they tricked Solomon, and so Solomon signed a peace treaty with these guys. Now later on, Solomon will get back at them. He'll trick them, and they'll all end up becoming Solomon's slaves and help build the empire. The Jebusites were also descended from Canaan. The Jebusites were the ones who built a city called Jebus. Today we call that city Jerusalem. So the Jebusites were the ones who built Jerusalem. Of the six tribes nation, four of them are direct descendants from Canaan, the grandson of Noah. And that's important to know because Noah placed a curse on Canaan. Genesis 9:25, he, Noah, said, "Cursed be Canaan. The lowest of slaves will he be to his brothers." And that comes to fruition. It bears fruit 1,500 years later, okay, when Solomon has now come to power and they're slaves under King Solomon. Okay, so it comes to be just as God says it will. So here's where we find the Hebrews. They're slaves. They're being driven hard under a ruthless Pharaoh. Then they're going to be called to march. They didn't have cars and trains and buses. They had to walk. Walk to the Holy Land. And we're going to see next week how short that journey actually should have been for them. And then once they get to the Holy Land, oh yeah, by the way, when you get there, you're going to have all these tribes of war, all these mighty armies, and you're going to have to drive them out of the land I'm giving you. So this is what the Israelites are being called to do. But as we're going to see here, God's problem was not Pharaoh, and God's problem was not the Egyptians, and God's problem was not the Hivites and the Hittites and the Jebusites and the Perizzites. Those weren't God's problem. God's problem was Moses. Exodus 3:10. "Now go," God talking to Moses here, "for I am sending you to Pharaoh. You must lead my people Israel out of Egypt." Now that should have been the end of the conversation. God shows up and he says, "Dave, listen, here's what I want you to do." That should be the end of the conversation, right? Mighty Moses, one of our Bible heroes. But as I said, God's biggest obstacle isn't Pharaoh, it's Moses. And so at this point, the sparring back and forth begins. Exodus 3:11. "But Moses said to God, 'Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the children of Israel out of Egypt?'" The first thing Moses does is start to question God's decision-making process. Why me? Who am I? Of all the people in the world, you want me? Are you sure you know what you're doing, God? You got the right person here? Now listen, there's three possibilities here, and we do that when God gives a calling on our life. Listen, we tend to think that we're inadequate, and we're not worthy of the calling, and we're not capable of carrying out whatever God calls us to do, and you know what? You're right. We're not. But God is. And all God is looking for is a willing vessel. So we're going to see what happens with Moses. Now, there's three possibilities here. Either Moses is afraid, or Moses still sees himself as a murderer, unworthy of doing anything for God, or he was thinking, but I'm just a shepherd. What can I possibly do? And so that's where the sparring begins. This is almost always the case in the Bible, by the way. When somebody brings up an objection to God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the children of Israel out? Almost every time somebody questions God in the Bible, you know what God does about it? Nothing. He ignores it like he didn't even hear it. Exodus 3:12, part A. This is how God responds. I will surely be with you. Listen, that's how he responds to us too. If God calls us to do something, he will make sure it's accomplished. Listen, if God calls you to do something and you say yes, you're no longer responsible for the outcome. God is. And God's going to make sure that it's done the way he wants it done. So God doesn't answer Moses' question, but he gives him assurance that he's going to be with him. Now the promise here in this next part is important. Exodus 3:12, part B. And this will be the sign to you that I have sent you. When, not if, when you have brought the people out of Egypt, all of you will worship God on this mountain. Now remember, Moses is over here in the wilderness. Egypt's over here. He's on the run. He hasn't been back here in 40 years. And so God says, this is going to be the sign that I have done all this through you. When you come out of Egypt, not if, the whole nation is going to come right here on this very mountain where you're standing right now, and they're going to bow down and worship me. Now, as I've said, the responsibility for the success of the mission depends not on Moses, it depends on God. God has to keep his word, okay? So Moses changed his tune here, and he says, well, okay, Lord, if you say so, then I'm your man. Not the way it happened. Exodus 3:13. But Moses protested. Here we go. If I go to the people of Israel and tell them the God of your ancestors has sent me to you, they will ask me, what is his name? Then what shall I tell them? Now listen, this isn't as obstinate as we think it sounds here. Moses really isn't being arrogant here. Remember that the Israelites have now been living under Egyptian rule for 430 years. And the Egyptians had hundreds and hundreds of gods. And so Moses is saying, well, if they ask me, which one of these gods did you talk to? I have to be able to give them a name. And so God will give him an answer. So he wasn't really being arrogant. He was just saying, which God? Because they're going to ask me. Slide number three, please, Zach. God's not angry or impatient. God said to Moses, I am who I am. It's amazing how God works. This just happened to be the song that John sang today, opened up with, if you guys are paying attention. And he said, say this to the people of Israel, I am has sent me to you. The phrase indicates God's eternal existence. He had no origin, no beginning, and no end. He is. I am here is the Hebrew word E-H-Y-E-H. It is the third person plural of that you will recognize. The third person plural of that word is Yahweh. Yahweh means he is. So from us looking up, he is, and from him looking down, I am. Okay? This is where the name comes from. Here God tells Moses, talk to the Hebrews and tell them that the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob has heard their cries and they are about to be set free. So God then gives him a promise that the land of the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites is going to be owned by the Israelis. Now listen, we picture this like this. We picture Moses is called to walk right up to Pharaoh and get in his face and demand, you better let my people go or else your time's coming, buddy. You're not going to like what's coming. And that's not what happened. He's instructed, Moses is instructed to have all the leaders of Israel go with him. So when Moses comes to Pharaoh, he probably has hundreds of people standing there with him. He's not there by himself. And the pop culture and sermons have taught us that Moses went alone to say, quote, "Let my people go." That's just not what he said. It's not biblical. Exodus 3:18. Look at what the Israelites wanted to do. This is the instructions that God gave to Moses. "The Lord, the God of the Hebrews, has met with us." This is what he's to say to Pharaoh. "And now please let us go a 3 days journey into the wilderness so that we can sacrifice to the Lord our God." All they wanted to do at this point was to go out into the wilderness and make sacrifices to God. That's all they wanted to do at this point. But God knew that Pharaoh wasn't going to go for that. Pharaoh's probably thinking at this point, they come and if you read the story, and we're skipping over some verses, but Moses comes in and says, "Our God wants us to go worship to him." And Pharaoh's thinking, "You're just a bunch of slaves. What God in his right mind would claim you people as his own people?" Listen, that's us. That's how we look to the world. What God in his right mind would choose us as his people? And that's what Pharaoh's thinking. "People are just a bunch of stinking slaves. My gods are way stronger than your God. Look who the slaves are and look who the masters are." God assures Moses that the Hebrews will listen to him. That's important to remember. He tells him also that Pharaoh will not listen to him. And then God gives Moses a glimpse of what's to come. Exodus 3:20. Excuse me. "So I will stretch out my hand and strike Egypt with all the wonders that I will do in it. After that, he will let you go." Okay, it's important to see this. God tells Moses right up front that after I perform all the plagues and do all these things, then he'll let you go, but not before. So don't be surprised when he doesn't let you go. God assures Moses that the Hebrews will listen to him. Remember that. Exodus 3:20. "So I will stretch out my hand and strike to Egypt with all the wonders I will do in it." Oh, we already did that, didn't we? Read carefully, we see that Moses here is finally given a glimpse of what's going to happen. So chapter 3 closes with this. It promises that the Israelites are going to leave Egypt when they finally go to their own land, and they're going to plunder the Egyptians. They're going to take every valuable they have. And listen, here's how they're going to do it. They're not going to walk up with swords and spears and things. They're just going to simply walk up to somebody. "Dave, you're my man here." They'll go up and say, "Hey, Dave, listen, can I have your gold? How about the keys to your car? Is it okay if I take that too? Let me have all your silver." Dave's going to say, "Yeah, whatever you want. Take whatever you want." And that's what happened when Israel left Egypt. They just went up and asked the Egyptians for all their valuables, and the Egyptians say, "Anything, just get away from us." And they give them all of their valuables, all their materials, everything. It is from these treasures, the gold and the silver and the bronze, it is from the things that they plundered from the Egyptians that they will make the Ark of the Covenant, the tabernacle, and all the furnishings within the tabernacle. All that was provided for from all the gold and all the stuff they took from the Egyptians. That's where they got all that stuff. It didn't just appear in the desert one day. Chapter 4 opens with Moses trying to get out of the calling again. Exodus 4:1. "But Moses protested again. When if they won't believe me or listen to me? What if they say the Lord never appeared to you?" Now remember, I told you to remember this? God has already told Moses that the people will listen to you. And here Moses is saying, "What if they don't listen to me?" See, we do that. Brian plays that game. We all play that game. Exodus 3:18, "The elders of Israel will listen to you." So Moses has already been assured that the people are going to listen to him. But still, God doesn't get angry with Moses. He doesn't get angry with us. We picture God as being some angry tyrant in the sky, and that's not who God is. And he doesn't get angry with Moses here. God asks Moses, "What's that you have in your hand?" And Moses says, "Well, it's just a simple shepherd's staff, God." And God says, in Exodus 4:3, God says, "Throw it on the ground." So he threw it on the ground, and it became a serpent. And Moses fled from it. And again, it's easy to gloss over, yeah, like most people would, I guess. It's easy to gloss over these verses, but there's a whole bunch of things going on here. Okay, Exodus 4:4. But the Lord said to Moses, put out your hand and catch it by the tail. So he put out his hand and caught it, and it became a staff in his hand. Now here's the symbolism of what's going on here. In the Bible, the snake and the serpent always represent Satan. The Egyptians had hundreds and hundreds of gods, and most of these gods either had snake-like features, either scales or fangs or a head that looked like a snake, or they were holding snakes. And so God is saying here, I'm God, and they're not. And he's giving Moses a lesson on this. Now, we know that this is a real snake, a real poisonous snake, because Moses ran in fear as soon as he saw it. And God has to coax him back in, and God says, pick it up by the tail. Now, the way you pick up a poisonous snake, as some of you guys know, you grab it behind the head. And the reason you do that is because if you grab it by the tail, things could turn around and bite you and kill you. Can't do that if you pick it up by the head. But it can do that if you pick it up by the tail. So God tells Moses, pick it up by the tail. And God was showing his mastery over Satan and over the gods of the Egyptians. And he wanted Moses to understand that, and he wanted to drive that point home. This is the first sign of the coming battle between the God of the Hebrews and the gods of the Egyptians. It's going to be a war for the ages. God tells Moses that the sign that he's the one that sent him to the Hebrew people will be the staff in his hand. And then God gives Moses a couple other signs, which we'll not get into, to assure him that he will go before him and perform signs and miracles for him. So after this, we come to probably the most widely mistaught verse in the Bible. And all you guys are going to know it. You've all heard it since you were this height or a grasshopper. Okay? No, Moses is still trying to get out of his calling here. Exodus 4:10. Then Moses said to the Lord, please, Lord, I've never been eloquent, neither recently nor in time past, nor since you've spoken to your servant, for I am slow of speech and slow of tongue. The New Living Translation says that he says, I get all tongue-tied and my words get all tangled up. So what's Moses' problem here? What's Moses' speech problem? Everybody knows. He stuttered. Moses had a stuttering problem, right? Wrong. But you've probably heard that from books you've read, from pastors, from TV evangelists, from your parents and your grandparents, from your Sunday school teachers. Here's the problem. It's a lie. And the problem here isn't that Moses is still arguing with God. The problem is that Moses outright lies to God's face here. Maybe you're wrong, Brian. Maybe everybody else is right. Maybe. I'm wrong a lot. I'm not perfect. God is. That's why I tell you guys always to read the Bible and see what the Bible says. So let's see what the Bible says about this stuttering problem. Acts 7:22. Moses was educated in all the wisdom of the Egyptians. It was powerful in speech and in action. Did Moses have a problem talking? What's it say? Listen, the Egyptians were the debate club champions of their day, and Moses was the captain of the debate team. He's back here in Exodus. He's simply lying to God. And God already knew that. But God's a big God, so he doesn't get his feelings hurt here. He lets it slide, and he even tells Moses, okay, well, listen, I'm going to contradict your argument by just telling you that I'll put the words in your mouth, so I'll tell you what to say. So he's overcoming Moses' lie, every objection, without calling Moses a liar here. And finally Moses says, okay, Lord, I'm your man. Right? Wrong. He does what Jeremiah did, and Gideon did, and Jonah, and almost everybody else in the Bible. He wanted nothing to do with this assignment. Like we said at the beginning, all he wants is to be left alone. That's all he wants. Look, I'll get to you when I need you, God, but until then, how about if you just stay out of my life and let me live my life? And this is where Moses is at in the wilderness. Exodus 4:13. We're nearing the end. But he said, oh, my Lord, please send someone else. Now listen, we've been going back and forth with this for half an hour, but God and Moses have been going back and forth with this for hours. Moses is still trying to get out of this calling. He doesn't want to do it. Anybody know who Scott Wesley Brown is? Scott Wesley Brown was a Christian singer back in the 60s, 70s. He had a fun song. It was meant to be funny. It was called, "Please Don't Send Me to Africa." "Oh Lord, I'm your willing servant. You know that I have been for years. I'm here in this pew every Sunday. I've stained it with many a tear. I'll see that the money is gathered. I'll see that the money is sent. I'll wash and stack the communion cups. I'll tithe 11%. I'll volunteer for the nursery. I'll go on the youth group retreat. I'll usher, I'll deacon, I'll go door to door. Just let me keep warming this seat. I've given you years of my service. I've always given my best. I've never asked you for anything. So Lord, I deserve this request. Please don't send me to Africa. I don't think I have what it takes. I'm just a man, not a Tarzan. Don't like lions, gorillas, or snakes. I'll serve you here in suburbia, in my comfortable middle-class life. But please don't send me out into the brush where the natives are restless at night." That's what Moses is doing here. Listen, I'll serve you any way you want, God. Do anything you want from right here. Don't make me go over there. I'll do anything you want. I'll serve on the church boards. I'll sing in the choir. I'll teach Sunday school. I'll pastor your church for you. I'll do anything you want. Just let me do it right here. Don't make me go anyplace else. And finally, at this point, God's had enough. You play, Deb, please. Thank you. Exodus 4:14. "Then the anger of the Lord burned against Moses, and he said, 'Is that not your brother Aaron the Levite? I know that he speaks fluently. And moreover, behold, he is coming out to meet you, and when he sees you, he will be glad in his heart.'" God is more than angry with Moses at this point. This has gone on for too long, and God's finally had enough. And so God is going to send Moses a helper, his own brother Aaron. As far as can be determined from the Bible, this will be the first time in 40 years that Aaron and Moses have seen each other. Exodus 4:15 and 16. "You shall speak to him and put the words in his mouth, and I will be with your mouth and with his mouth, and will teach you both what to do. He shall speak to you to the people, and he shall be your mouth, and you shall be as God to him." Listen, this is another verse we tend to gloss over and think, well, God's just going to talk to Aaron now. No. Pharaoh would sit on his throne, and he would have a person that was literally called, in English translation, the mouth. And so Pharaoh's back here, away from the people, and he would whisper things to his top aide, to the mouth, and then the mouth would come out here, repeat word for word what Pharaoh said to this guy. And the purpose was, Pharaoh's back here looking like a god. I don't have to deal with you mere people. I'm going to send my messenger, and he could tell you what I say. And that's what's going on here with Moses and Aaron. God is not going to talk to Aaron. God's going to talk to Moses. Moses is going to tell Aaron what to say. Aaron's going to repeat the words to Pharaoh. And so they understood this because they grew up in this culture. These verses will be fulfilled, by the way, in verse 27 when God tells Aaron to go seek his brother Moses. And so here at last, despite all his objections, God still gives Moses his part to play in the drama. Listen, no matter what we do, God still has a part for us to play. Exodus 4:17. "And take your shepherd's staff with you and use it to perform the miraculous signs I have shown you." As angry as God was with Moses, he never gave up on Moses. Listen, he is never going to give up on you either. Never. Next week, the narrative is going to move from God's point of view and Moses' point of view, and we're going to shift to the Hebrew slaves' point of view. We're going to see what they're going through and how they're being oppressed. Last week, after Moses killed the Egyptian, the message was that God can and will use you. no matter how far you've fallen, no matter what you've done, no matter how far you've gone, God still wants to use you. He still loves you. He still cares for you. He will still fight for you. The message this week is a little bit different. The message this week is that when God does call you, and if you're a Christian, He will, no excuse you can offer is acceptable to God. None. In Bible study this week, we were talking about Romans 5:12. So then each one of us will give an account of himself to God. That's for us. It's not for non-believers, that's for us. Each one of us will give an account of ourselves to God. Did I not give you that one? Probably not. The verse in Romans is not a salvation verse. Our sins were dealt with on the cross. Our eternity was secure the day we accepted Christ as our Lord and Savior. So what are we going to give an account of God for? We're going to give an account to God for what we did after He had a calling on our lives. What did we do with that calling? Did we make excuse after excuse until God found somebody else to do His work? Or did we say, yes, God, and do what God wanted us to do? Listen, here's the thing. They're slaves. They've got a 40-year journey in front of them, and then they have to drive out the warring tribes that are inhabiting the land before they can conquer the land, before they can live in the land we call Israel. Listen, when God calls you, that doesn't mean it's going to be an easy journey. It's not what it means. It does mean that God is going to be with you, and He is going to get you from where you are now to where He wants you to be. And nothing in here, though it might be difficult, can prevent you from getting from here to here. That's what happens when God calls you. And if you're a Christian, God has called you. Listen, here's the thing, guys. I mean this with all my heart. You guys are an amazing group of people. An amazing group of people. I have never been in a church, and I've been in a lot of churches, never been in a church that are like you guys. This is not a normal church, okay? You guys are absolutely amazing. But here's the thing. Jesus is standing at the door and knocking. Are you going to let Him in? I love you guys.